This is News in No Time. At Gordon, on today's roundtable, the CIA shuts down a bin Laden search unit and Nigerian bishops challenge the church. Joining us today to discuss these topics and more, Glenn Lowry, professor of economics at Brown University. He joins us from member station WRNI in Providence, Rhode Island. And joining us via phone today from New York is E.R. Shipp, professor of journalism at Hofstra University. And from our New York digs, Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. All right, folks, thanks very much. Before we get into those two stories, we want to talk about what a lot of people were talking about this morning, headlines on all the newscasts, and that is North Korea firing test missiles, this the seventh. There is concern, and has been for a long time, Michael Myers, about North Korea setting up not only their defense system, but whether they're readying themselves for nuclear devices. We are told that they are a long way away from mastering this technology, long way being 7, 10, 12 years, depending on who you listen to. But what does this say to the United States with the idea that Bush had already admonished them and had voiced concerns about these launches?
Well, it says to the United States that we had better be on alert. NORAD is already on alert, and it seems to me to be a test of our own technology as well as our nerves and our resolve. North Korea is in the race. It's in the nuclear arms race, and hope is fading that North Korea will stand down. Talk about weapons of mass destruction. What if these missiles had payloads? What if one of these missiles were to have been targeted and aimed at South Korea? South Korea is in the protection of the United States. These are very serious international and national issues.
Glenn, again, I brought this up many times when we talk about what we call flexing of a muscle from a country that heretofore, certainly years ago, would not have done this to the United States. What are we seeing in terms of the diminishing policing role of the United States?
Well, I think, Ed, that we ought not to overreact to what's happening. The way I read this, the North Korean regime is looking for attention and legitimacy and direct talks with the United States, and this is a way for them to try to get our attention. All the experts are saying that the military threat here is minimal, though over the longer term, North Korea could be a problem. Obviously, we're going to have to deal with this, but we can't just unilaterally deal with it, and we can't just nuke these people back into the Stone Age. We're going to have to rely on diplomacy, and we're going to have to rely on the effort of our allies in the region, the South Koreans, the Japanese, and also the Russians and the Chinese. This is not an easy problem, but it's not a problem that admits of any direct military solution. And these people who are talking about investing scores of billions of dollars in building some kind of space-based missile defense because of this action by the North Koreans, I think, are on the wrong track.
What of the idea, ER, of many people, many pundits, saying that this is North Korea's way of saying, you better pay attention to me? This is a pretty big way of suggesting that.
Yeah, but it was actually, in the actuality, they got our attention. They made international news, but the missiles tanked. They didn't do anything that they were supposed to have done. They flopped into the Sea of Japan. So, yes, Korea wants us to pay attention, but we realized that they were using outdated technology, and it didn't work.
But North Korea is not a child.
Glenn Lowry was saying we need to focus on diplomacy. We need to get the United Nations to become more effective in talking to North Korea. But we can't imagine a world in which the United States is the only power with weaponry. Other nations also have weaponry, and they're trying to figure out how to use it.
Well, I think it's a mistake to look at North Korea as a child and to treat it like a child. And in terms of the early stages of its missile development, don't forget that the Soviet Union, when it was a Soviet Union, had lots of flops as well. In our early stages of missile development, we had flops.
Sure.
This is a test. These are tests. These are seven missiles fired. I think it's dangerous and perilous for us, for the world community, to underestimate the peril
of
another country in the nuclear arms race.
But don't estimate, because now we have 24-hour TV, so anything that happens is going to be overblown.
Yet there are those, ER, that will suggest, Michael brought up NORAD, and I think you said earlier, tell folks who may not know about that, that's North American Aerospace Defense Command, and that is, quote, the system that keeps us safe, end quote, the idea that these missiles are ready to fight back. But that being said, there are those at NORAD that will tell you that there is no don't concern yourself with it in today's world.
That's right.
Well, that's probably true that we've gotten a little lackadaisical. So maybe this will perk them up. But I still say that what North Korea did wasn't much of a threat to anybody. It was just saying, hey, look me over.
Let me ask you this, Glenn. The idea that let's get away from the actual firing of the missiles, but the political and social ramifications of the idea that it continues, and I've said this many times on this program, it continues to be problematic for the United States to tell countries not to arm themselves when we stay locked and loaded.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly true, and we are locked and loaded. Moreover, if you were sitting in Pyongyang and you wanted to try to figure out how to maximize your chances of survival and not being invaded by the United States, having nuclear weapons capacity and being able to pose a threat to the U.S. and its allies seems to be the best way forward. It is a political problem, though. It's a political problem, not mainly a military problem. And I just hope that we won't get ourselves ginned up into some kind of, you know, overreaction on the military side, when what we really have to do is manage this long-term transition. Look, North Korea is a failed society. The South is flourishing. The long-run resolution of that situation has to be a reunification in the country in which the democracy and capitalism of South Korea triumphs. And we're just managing this transition from here to there, and we have to, you know, make sure not to mess it up.
All right. Let's turn our attention to the CIA and what is being called a shutdown of the bin Laden unit. The New York Times has reported that 24 analysts in the unit were reassigned. This unit was put together to, in fact, find and hunt for Osama bin Laden. There's growing concern within the CIA that this a unit had become a rebel unit, and the zeal for capturing bin Laden took on a cult-like atmosphere, it's said by some. The CIA is suggesting, whispers behind closed doors, that this move reflects that bin Laden is no longer the same kind of threat, but that the power has been shifting. So while the unit has disbanded, the hunt for al-Qaeda leaders has not, Michael Myers, according to some in the CIA.
Well, symbolically, how do you do this? How do you shut the unit that is pursuing public enemy number one in the eyes of the United States and lots of members of the civilized world? Reading between the lines suggests to me, at least, that here's a conspiracy, that the CIA already knows where Osama bin Laden is to be found. It may only be a matter of time before they lower the boom or drop the bomb or bring him in. But if not so, then
so
this
what would
is
they be waiting
omission.
On in your
this
mind?
This is a huge omission of failure.
Well, carry that theory out, that conspiracy out. What, pray tell, would they be waiting for?
Well, I'm only conjecturing, of course. But if I were to be cynical and conjecture, you know, 2006 is an election year. Need I say more?
Well,
no, okay. Silence. Speak up.
All right. More.
Yes, ER, please save
more.
Us. Go ahead.
I think that this was just a very practical decision. The war against terrorism is bigger than bin Laden, and it makes sense to deploy your forces, your personnel, in ways that make sense to deal with the war on terrorism and not be so much a part of the cult of getting bin Laden. I think that's what this is about.
There are others, Glenn Lowry, who are suggesting, former CIA operatives and the like, officials who say anyone who believes that bin Laden or sees this as a view of bin Laden no longer being a threat would be gravely mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Gravely is right.
Well, I'm sure that's true, although at the same time, the capture of bin Laden would not win the war on terror, no more than did the killing of Zarqawi in Iraq and the insurgency there. I say enough of this cowboy stuff. I mean, this idea that we're going to catch bin Laden, we want him dead or alive, we're going to, you know, hang his carcass or whatever, and then we're going to gloat about it, because the enemy that we're up against is amorphous, it's international, it is homegrown in many places.
But, Glenn, I don't know that you can be so cavalier about discarding the cowboy way. Beyond Bush, it is the American way. I mean, John Wayne is and has continued to be the icon. Clint Eastwood is the icon. We like that.
But this could be a problem, Ed. This could actually lead us to act in ways that are contrary to our interests. I mean, my view is that what we're up against with radical Islam is a deeply political problem. We have to persuade people, ultimately, of something. We can't really defeat them all militarily. And, you know, I think about what's going on in the Middle East right now with the Gaza Strip and whatnot. And I think about the way that the United States does not act to restrain the Israeli government and the actions that it takes vis-a-vis the Palestinians. That's the kind of thing that costs us in terms of the alienation and the enraging of potentially radical Muslims around the world. That's the kind of actions that we need to be thinking about, not catching a particular individual.
Are you suggesting we should, Glenn, we should stand down and not capture or in some way stop Osama bin Laden?
No. Keep looking for him, but de-emphasize it and be aware of the fact that there are other things that you can do that will also help you to diffuse the threat of radical Islam, not just capturing bad guys.
All right, Michael, let me take you back to the map of the conspiracy. If you will. I don't know why I'm treading this road again, but let me ask this. The idea that if bin Laden is not captured by midterm election, by 2008, what does this mean for Republicans? Can you translate it that way? Can you do one, two, three?
My nonpartisan view is that the GOP is in trouble. And they need all the help they can possibly get. And what better help could it be in this war on terrorism, in this war that people are the American electorate is saying we're losing? What better inspiration to the GOP's reelection prospects than to capture or to kill Osama bin Laden, public enemy number one?
ER, you say we cannot connect those dots so easily.
Well, we can't make it so simplistic as that. There are people out here, like the seven guys who were recently arrested, calling themselves somehow involved in Al-Qaeda, and they really aren't. There are all these wannabes out there. So the war on terrorism has to be broader than looking.
But we know Osama bin Laden. But we know what he represents. We know what he says. We know what he's done. He brags about it. This is not speculation. This is not simple. It's simplicity to go elsewhere, to look at the wannabes. We're talking about Osama bin Laden.
But it won't solve our problem.
But go for the other people, too.
It would solve one of our problems, our big problem.
All right, let's move on to what we're hearing from Nigeria and bishops there. Mm-hmm. Nigerian Anglican church bishops in Nigeria are speaking to what we heard from the head of the church, the Archbishop of Canterbury, not long ago, suggesting a two-tier system of church membership to avoid concern and schisms and division over the issue of homosexuality. The bishops in Nigeria are saying that this is ridiculous and that the church here in the United States has become cancerous and needs to be removed because of their concerns about the consecration of a gay bishop here in the United States, and also the disagreement surrounding the church blessings here over same-sex marriage and couples, Glenn.
Yeah, and it's a problem for the global Anglican communion. The Episcopal Church here in the United States is more liberal by far than is the church elsewhere, especially in the third world and especially in Africa. It's a church, after all. The African Anglicans, the Nigerian Anglicans, believe that the American church is conducting itself in an unbiblical way. That's their reading of the Bible. And in this diversity of values, the question arises to whether or not the Anglican communion can sustain its unity. I think the Archbishop of Canterbury, Archbishop Williams, is making a valiant effort in that direction by his proposal of this kind of hierarchy of status within the communion. But I doubt that it's going to be able to resolve these fundamental value conflicts between Anglicans who have a different reading of the Bible insofar as the status of homosexuality is concerned.
Very interesting here, the idea of a division, a two-tier system in the church world, one that would diminish the role of the Episcopal Church, as it's called here in the United States. And this can be extended to the divisions and fights and concerns that we see in the Catholic religion and others.
This is very true. We have to keep in mind, though, that the world is changing to the extent that many of these old-line denominations are fading fast because they're not able to address current issues and accept people as they are today. The Episcopal Church started out, the Anglican Church started out, because Henry VIII wanted to have another wife. So in order to divorce her, he had to leave the Anglican family, the Catholic family, and found his own church. So that church started out with serious questions about who is in charge of what.
Mm-hmm. But going back to the central issue here in terms of the homosexuality question, you have to admire, it seems to me, Michael Myers, you have to admire the rhetorical flourish. It is so hateful, which is ironic for Bible-thumping hellfire sermons. It's just ironic that people who believe in love would also be so hateful in their language. But, you know, they're entitled to their beliefs. God bless them. But, you know, realistically, you know, Don't Ask, Don't Tell originated in the church, whose peers are full of homosexuals and lesbians. You have to remember that as well. So yeah.
Let me just observe here that,
Glenn, 20 seconds.
Know, it's like with the military, the issue here is the status of homosexuality. Of course, there have always been homosexuals in this church as well as in the military. The issue is whether this way of life is to be honored and whether the biblical injunction, as some read it, against this way of life is, or whether that is to be respected. These are legitimate questions. These are legitimate questions for people who are trying to find out what, you know, God is telling them.
Seems to me like a lot of these religions, like the movie title, I got to stop us there, have their eyes wide shut. And we'll have to continue to see what in fact happens.
God
thank you,
bless
Michael, and Glenn. Greatly appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.